These Days.
Kids These Days.
This is Kids These Days.
This week on the program, we're talking about dating. Going steady, having a main squeeze, just hanging out, getting serious. We say a lot of things to mean we're seeing someone romantically. So today on Kids These Days, we explore what it's like when a caregiver starts dating again, and what are some ways parents can adjust to and help out when their kid starts dating. Also in this program, we talk with an Alaska Men Magazine matchmaker and invite teens to a roundtable discussion on today's topic. And another sweetheart-inspired KTV on the go for you. All that and more this hour. Hi, I'm Shanna Sheehy, and thanks for joining me today. Whether you're getting out there again or you're wondering when the right time is for your child to start dating, the people we choose to see romantically end up impacting our families and family life in a variety of ways. So what's your experience? Did your son take his first date to prom recently? Or are you getting back in the game and encountered some situations worth sharing? As always, we want to hear from you. Comment on our Facebook page. You can link there from kidsthesedays.org. Joining me for today's discussion are Ashley Barrera. Ashley is a marital and family therapist in Anchorage who holds a Master's of Science in Human Development and Family Studies from Iowa State University. She's in private practice in Anchorage, where she works with individuals, couples, and families on topics related to relationship enhancement, divorce, remarriage, and blended family therapy. Ashley is a proud member of a blended family herself and enjoys sharing her life with her fiance and his six-year-old son. Thanks to you for being with us, Ashley.
Thank you so much for having me.
And from the studios of WABE in Atlanta, Georgia, Kyle Bradford joins the conversation. Kyle is the man behind ChopperPapa.com, a blog of observations on single fatherhood, divorce, relationships, dating, manhood, and other subjects he lovingly calls intellectual roadkill. A divorced dad for 7 years, Kyle is familiar with what it means to be a parent in the modern family. A lover of chopper motorcycles and 70s soft rock music, he lives in Atlanta with his children, who are 8 and 10. Thanks to you, Kyle, for being with us this hour.
Thanks so much for having me. Glad to be here.
Well, Kyle, since today's program is about dating, and we're taking it kind of from two different directions, let's start first with the caregiver. In your case, you're a dad, and you've been divorced, in your bio it says, for 7 years. So, you know, have you started dating again?
Oh, yes. I started dating from almost the moment the ink was signed on the divorce decree. And I was married for 7 years in a relationship for 10, and like most guys in a divorce situation, that we just want to get back into it. And I spared no time in getting back into the dating scene. I started getting online and seeing what was out there, and, you know, had my fair share of dates almost immediately.
Okay. So how old were your kids when you started dating?
Well, that was the fortunate thing. My son was 9 months old, and my daughter was just over 2. And looking back now, that was in many ways a blessing, for lack of a better term, in the fact that some of the mistakes that I made, and I made so many in dating when I first got divorced, that I was able to kind of hide behind their naivety. And have I known then what I know now, I would have done some things differently. But yes, they were young and don't remember any of those previous dates and the relationships that I had then when I did some things that I shouldn't have done and really brought them into relationships before I should have.
So now you bring up an interesting point, right? So the age of the children, of your children, if you're a caretaker, if you're a parent, a dad or a mom, and you've been through divorce and you want to get back into seeing other people, you know, where your kids are in terms of their age is pretty important with, you know, how you're dealing with the dating factor in your family life. And Ashley Barrera, maybe this is a great place for you to come in and to you know, talk from your experience about, you know, those different things to be considering if you're a parent and you want to date and you have kids of different ages.
I think one of the first things to think about when you're ready to get back out there is why.
after the divorce. What are you looking for? Are you looking for love? Has your ex-spouse or ex-partner now moved on to someone else? And are you wanting to get back out there yourself? And I think maybe this is also a good time to go to consult with a friend or a family member or perhaps a therapist to kind of ask yourself some of these hard questions so that you're not in the situation where you've been on a few dates and you're thinking, gosh, do I introduce the kids now? Do I actually think this person is someone that I want in my life or my children's life? And having those conflicted feelings come later. Asking yourself things like, what are you looking for in a partner? What did you learn from your past relationship? And how will you know when you found that person that you want to be with? What do those qualities look like? And thinking too, what are your deal breakers? Or what are your kind of hot areas from previous relationships, areas that you know might be, for lack of a better word, a trigger for you? And working through some of those things to prepare yourself for the dating world again and to prepare your children for that eventually, to have that talk with him. And so in regard to the different ages and the different developmental stages, I think that what comes in there is child development in general. I think a lot of parents are quite interested in that. We're reading the books. We're blogging about it online. We're looking for all of that. And I did a little bit of research before coming on the show just to see what's out there. And I found some great sites that are available and some great information. And it sounds like Kyle's is most likely one of those. I peeked a little bit and looks quite exciting. But thinking about what you're going to tell an infant or a toddler or a preschooler or someone who's in elementary school is very different than what you're going to be telling your high schooler or your 30-year-old, because you stuck it out while the kids were young and now you decided after 30 years of marriage that, you know what, this has been great, we raised a great family, but I think we're done. And so what do you say? And that, as I said, is a great time to start consulting with people because there are so many things to consider. I think, you know, a toddler, this is mom's friend, or mom's going to go out and hang out with friends just like you play with your friends at school, is very different than what you're going to be telling your 16-year-old who's also dating at the time. And I think thinking about why you're telling your child certain things and what you're telling them is going to be very important in this process.
Yes, I can imagine. So, you know, as we were researching for this topic, that's another thing we found too, that it sounds from just the little bit of reading that I did that maybe it does get, and this actually goes toward what Kyle was saying as well, that that maybe when you're talking about kids in your family who are also of dating age, that it can get a little sticky if you're also dating as well. And I'd like to figure out, like, why is that maybe more difficult than the toddler who, like in your case, Kyle, you know, you can say, I'm just going with friends, or maybe if they're 9 months old, they're not even really noticing that you're away for any particular reason.
Gosh, with a teenager, boundaries is what comes to me immediately. I think what's appropriate for an adult is very different than what's appropriate for a 16-year-old. And what's appropriate for a 14-year-old or an 18-year-old is still different within there. There are so many developmental milestones and changes between 14 and 18. They may seem like they're so close chronologically, but what's appropriate at that time, I think, is worthy of discussion with them. There, I think the question that comes in often is, you know, well, when do we start spending the night? What model are you setting for your children then? And I think it's important that you can say to your child, you know what, I respect that you're at this place in your life and you're looking forward to meeting these new people and having these new experiences, and so am I. We are both dating, but I'm an adult and I get to do things that are different than a teenager does. And I think that that models appropriate boundaries, it models an appropriate parent-child relationship. You're not two girlfriends out going on dates with different guys. You're not double dating. You're not skewing boundaries there and coming home and gushing about your evening. When you were in a relationship with the child's other parent and you'd had a great hot, steamy date night, would you have gone home and told that child what happened between his or her parents? No. So I think it's important to remember those things with your teenager as you're dating.
So, Kyle Bradford, you have children who are 8 and 9 now, and you are still dating, or is that not the case anymore?
No, it's interesting. I wanted to respond to Ashley's comment. I've been in a relationship with a woman for over 3 years, and she has 2 children. One's a teenager. One is about to turn a teenager. She's 12. And the very topic that Ashley was talking about is something that me and her discussed in depth. And I kind of disagree a little bit from the standpoint of setting boundaries, because we believe that we set an example for our children. And for us to, for example, be in a sleepover arrangement with the kids there, while it's easy to say today, you know, we're an adult, we can do this, you're not an adult, it doesn't always go that way. It almost becomes the, you know, do as I say, not as I do thing. And I don't know if that's effective parenting. It's not effective parenting for us. And we've made the decision early on that we would never have sleepovers. That, you know, we've got plenty of time where our children are with their other parents. And in those cases, that's kind of when we do our, you know, our couples things. But, you know, when we're with our children, we want to be able to project for them the type of relationships that they hopefully will, they will find one day. Or when they're 19 years old and they say, you know what, I'm going to move in with such and such in college. And we're like, do you really think that's a good idea? They can't respond to us and say, well, you did it. Why can't we?
It's really interesting. Yeah, that's really interesting. Like from your practicing the ideas of how do you be with someone in a serious relationship, and then you see yourselves as models for your kids as they get into relationships, it sounds like.
Yeah, we feel we're going to be answerable to that at some point to them. You know, kids have great memories. And, you know, even now my kids think of things that I did 3 years ago, and I'm like, where did that come from? You know, and to think that, you know, I just don't feel that we can separate that and use boundaries in that way so that we can do things that we feel like we want to do and hope that they're not going to recognize and at some point emulate that, because our experience has been that it's the exact opposite.
Huh. Okay. Ashley?
Kyle, I think you bring up an excellent point in the first statement that you said in response, is that you had such in-depth discussions about that. And I think that that's absolutely ideal for what couples will be doing as they move forward in their relationships, as you are bringing in two families, essentially, that she has her children, you have yours, and you have your values. And I think that's one of the areas where couples start to get into trouble is when they're not having those discussions in the very beginning. And so I just have to say that I really respect that you guys are living what you believe. And I think that that's fantastic. So thank you for your response there.
It's worked out well for us thus far.
That's what's important.
Well, that's Ashley Barrera and Kyle Bradford, and I'm Shanna Sheehy, and we're raising Alaska's future today on Kids These Days. Today's conversation is about dating, and I think it's a great time for this. Anyone who's taken the courageous leap into the dating world knows how difficult it can be to find the right person, especially if you're a single parent or have had difficulty in your previous relationship or two. That's why some singles will turn to Susie Carter, Alaska's most notorious matchmaker. Editor and founder of Alaska Men Magazine, Susie Carter has been helping people find each other for almost 3 decades. In that time, she's learned a lot about love and making relationships work. She shared her perspective on looking for love in The Last Frontier with Kids These Days producer Sarah Gonzalez.
Susie Carter, thank you so much for speaking to us on Kids These Days.
Great to be here.
So I want to start with how you first came up with the idea of Alaska Men Magazine. I think this is so appropriate for today's show, and it's so interesting that you were running a daycare in the 80s and you noticed that there were a lot of single dads dropping their kids off, and so you tried to find them wives. Is that how you got going with the magazine?
That's exactly how it is, and I have actually a background in working with kids and foster children for like almost 20 years. And so when I moved up to Alaska, that's what I jumped into again. And it was really funny. Almost every single person that I was taking care of children for, they were all single fathers, just a few single mothers. And so, you know, putting two and two together, they were kind of like desperate and asking for help all the time. So that's how I got started.
So you've been publishing Alaska Men Magazine now for 25 years, and I'm sure that in this time you've probably seen quite a few common threads among both the men who are in the magazine and the women who are writing to them. What have you seen?
A strong common thread. You know, everybody wants to find love. Everybody wants to be happy. They see somebody and they have instant eye appeal, and they don't always, they wonder why it doesn't always work out, you know, and I like her, I'm attracted to her, but what's going on? And the thing that I have found out that people, once they have had any kind of a relationship, if it didn't go well, they have some hurts connected to it. And so they carry those hurts with them. And so the next time they meet somebody that okay, they are attracted to them, and the first thing they do is they start worrying, oh my gosh, it's going to be the same way it was before. I can see this little habit, and it's going to be just that same way. And so all that worry and fretting brings about problems.
So how do you get around that? What's your advice to people who say that that's what they're going through and they really want this relationship to work, even so?
I think the first thing they have to do is realize what is going on, that those past hurts are affecting their future. And the first thing I make people do is sit down and make a list of all the things they don't want, that they know they absolutely, if they don't want somebody that smokes, or whatever it is, make a list so they'll have that in front of them. And then I make them, okay, you know what you don't want. Now I want you to make a list of what you really would like to have and see, and compare the list. Start really being aware of who you are and what you want. And a lot of people have never really sat down and thought about it before. You have that basis to go by. That's mm-hmm. the background. And then it's a matter of meeting people. And actually, you start watching yourself and seeing the type of people you're attracted to, any red flags that come up. Okay, I'm constantly being attracted to people that do this, and why is it? So there's a lot of things that, you know, being an advisor as a matchmaker, you just see each person is so different, and yet there are those basics that they do have to be aware of. And, you know, just like children, mm-hmm. children bring in another whole avenue, because when you have children from before, sometimes people don't want to get married to somebody that has children. They want to have their own, or they don't mind. In fact, they would love to have children. So, and some people think they want one thing, and they find out, they fall in love, and they find out it doesn't matter. I love her, and I love her kids. Mm-hmm. You know, each thing is different.
Hmm. Do you think that Alaskans have a special set of obstacles when it comes to finding love? I mean, you feature Alaskan men in a magazine. I mean, what might be different about looking for love in Alaska than in other places?
The biggest thing, of course, is what people say is more of an isolated area. It's a frontier area, and so, you know, it's not as big a population base as you would get in a city. And to me, that's a big plus. And a lot of people, it's a big plus. But some people, you know, it's harder for them to get out and meet. And I have all kinds of things that I can recommend on where to meet people, you know, especially women to meet guys. I tell them, hey, go down to the Kenai in fishing season, make a bunch of brownies, just walk up and down and talk to the men that you think are interesting, you know.
Wow, that's great advice. You strike me as the kind of person who, once you've made, help someone find love, that you probably tend to attend their weddings and stay in their life. Is that true?
Oh, I definitely do. I love to go to the weddings. I've got one to go to in September I'm really looking forward to. And, you know, sometimes they get married, and then all of a sudden I get a note, hey, we've been married now for a year, and we're going to have a baby. And so, you know, typically, when people fall in love, the last thing they think about is anything else but I'm in love.
Do you have any idea about how many couples you've brought together? Can you estimate?
Oh my gosh, thousands. I've one of these days I've got to sit down and figure it out. But you've got to figure, you know, how many issues of the magazines. And then sometimes I interview men, and by the time I get done interviewing and working with them, they find somebody, they realize, and then, oh my gosh, I've known this gal and I really like her and I never realized it before. And so they get married before they even come out in the magazine.
Wow.
So, you know, it's a lot. And to me, it's the most wonderful thing in the world. Talk about rewarding to see people so happy after they've been very unhappy. Some of the men that I meet are widowed or have gone through some kind of really traumatic divorce, and you know, it's ideal in bringing happiness.
Susie Carter, thank you so much for speaking with us on Kids These Days.
Oh, you bet. Thanks so much.
Susie Carter is the founder and editor of Alaska Men Magazine. She was talking with Sarah Gonzalez, this show's producer. This is Kids These Days. I'm Shanna Sheehy. Ashley Barrera, a marital and family therapist in Anchorage, and Kyle Bradford, also known as Chopper Papa. He's an Atlanta-based blogger, and they're both joining me today to talk about dating. So we just heard some fun advice and stories and recollections from an Alaska matchmaker, and I wanted to invite either of you to comment if you're so inclined.
thought the brownies was hilarious.
And yes,
I wonder if that actually works.
And that's something I'd like to say too in Alaska. You know, there's this perception that there are many more males than females, and I don't know if that's actually true anymore. It might have been at one point in time, but I know that that's still urban, maybe even rural legend in Alaska.
I really appreciated how she talks to people about what it is that they're looking for, what it is that they're not, and then what happens when you find out that what you thought you wanted wasn't exactly it at all, and now you've moved on and found someone that's amazing, and they're nothing you ever knew you wanted, and there you are, living happily ever after, and having babies. And
well, let me ask you something personal then, mm-hmm. Ashley. So, in the introduction of you, in the beginning of this program, I mentioned that you're engaged to a man who has a 6-year-old
yes.
son. We've been talking about dating, in particular, with the circumstances that arise if you're dating someone, or if you have kids involved in that picture. So. I assume that you don't have your own children at this point?
I do not, no.
Okay. So what is that like? How is the experience of being a person who doesn't have your own children dating someone who has this other very significant person in his life, right? His son?
Absolutely. Well, to start, my family, my mother in particular, owns Puffin Heights Montessori School here in town. And so I grew up around families and children in that sort of caregiver role, teaching. When I was younger, I went from being the junior assistant to a teacher and all these sorts of things, and got to know people, and I got to know other people's children quite intimately. And it was something that I was never in a position to take away someone's role. I was never going to replace a mother or a father. I was just simply another person that cared for that child in their life. And for me, that's a very natural state. I'm an only child. My family up here, everyone else lives down in the lower 48, aside from my parents and I, and we've made really good friends up here, and that what I call the family of choice. And so I have nieces up here that are not my blood relatives, but I think of them as very important children in my life, that everyone, there's always room for more love. And so when I met Paul, I don't think it ever crossed my mind. You know, he had a son. He was very passionate, is very passionate about his son. And as I got to know him, I got to know his child a little bit through him, through the stories that he would tell. And the time came when we decided it was time to introduce the child and I. And we just all kind of clicked. And so I tell myself, nobody has the dream that you're going to grow up and have a child with someone that you don't spend the rest of your life with, and you're going to have to co-parent and go out into the dating world again. That's nobody's dream. I didn't think, you know, when I grow up, I'm going to find a guy that already has a child with somebody else in this other existing relationship, and then we're going to live happily ever after. That's not the fairy tale that anyone ever thinks about, but it's my amazing, wonderful reality, and I just actually now couldn't imagine it any other way.
Wow. Well, that, you know, Ashley, thanks for sharing that personal story. And that makes me think of something that you write, actually, Kyle. And I'm going to quote from your blog here, the chopperpapa.com blog. You say that there's a litmus test if you're trying to figure out whether or not, as a woman dating a guy, you're going to like this guy. And you say, quote, "At the first hint a man begins making excuses for why he isn't involved in his children's lives, run." So that's kind of the opposite. Yep. If someone's not active, then you can learn something from that. That's what you're saying, right?
Absolutely. I look at it like this. If a man will make excuses for not being in his child's life, he'll make excuses for not being in yours.
I like that.
Yeah.
It's a good way to look at things. Yep, absolutely.
He absolutely will. And, you know, I wrote a post called The Manifesto of the Absent Father. It's by far my most commented, my most viewed. And in that post, I was pretty harsh, because I was very passionate about these fathers that are not involved in their children's lives. And I spoke directly to the women, and I'm like, if you are in a relationship with a man who has walked out on his children or is ignoring his children, you're as guilty as he is, because you are now allowing him to rest in your affection and love when he knows he's not doing the fatherly thing. He's not living up to his own responsibilities.
Hmm. Yeah. Now, Kyle Radford, when you've been in a serious relationship now for a few years, you said, but when you were dating, you know, did you are an active parent, first of all. I know that that is the case. So when you're telling a woman that you're dating about your kids and maybe gushing about them sometimes and bragging about the things that they do well or, you know, being tormented by problems that you have that you're trying to conquer in your family life, you know, did you ever turn any women off, would you say, because they just didn't have any interest in being with a guy who'd be that into his kids?
All the time.
Really?
I was very sensitive because my children were so young. You know, I was still changing diapers and feeding bottles. And when you're talking about on the dating market, my stock price wasn't very high. I mean, what woman is going to want to be with a guy who has to be home at a certain time because he's got to give his kids naps? And as I look back on it now, though, I'm glad I was that way, because otherwise you start going down a path and then she realizes that, you know what, this is not really what I signed up for. And if you've introduced the kids into that relationship, then it just kind of gets ugly. And, you know, you don't want to be that father. I call them, you know, the revolving door of romances, where, you know, you've got a relationship, you know, your kids have met someone here and then 6 months later it's someone else. So I was, at the time, it was kind of painful, but now looking back on it, I'm glad I was as upfront as I was, because it probably, well, it certainly, to Barney Fife something, it nipped it in the bud. That way we're not going down a path that we both know would end quicker than it should, or it should never start it at all.
Right. Well, you're tuned into Kids These Days on your listener-supported radio station. This program is distributed by the Alaska Public Radio Network, and we record in the studios of KSKA-FM in Anchorage. Still to come this hour, more discussion with our guests about today's dating scene. Also, we host a roundtable discussion with teens about what it's like for them to date these days, and another installment of our KTD On The Go series. Stay with us, and we'll be right back after a quick break.
I'd never feel again. I said I'd never care what's real, but then
new technologies are giving us an unprecedented view of the inner workings of our brains. And next time on Kids These Days, we're talking about brain development during a child's teenage years. Adolescence is a period of growth that is distinct. So just what is going on between the ears of your teenager? We'll also talk with a man who's known as the Teen Whisperer, and you tell us what you remember as the biggest risk you took before making it to adulthood, plus a new Dr. KTD. Join us for all that next time on Kids These Days. You're listening to Kids These Days. We're glad to have you with us. I'm Shanna Sheehy. We continue the hour with more conversation from guests Ashley Barrera and Kyle Bradford about the dating scene these days. Tell us what you think. Comment on our Facebook page by linking there from kidsthesedays.org. Well, the conversation today is about dating in the family. And for some parents, the whole idea that their kids will someday have romantic relationships can seem a little daunting. Do kids today even go out? And what's going on with hooking up? KTD producer Sarah Gonzalez talked to a few teens about what they know about the world of dating in high school and college.
I'm Sydney. I'm 19.
I'm Eli. I'm 19.
I'm Aviva, and I'm 18.
So. Yeah. Yeah. I date. On occasion.
In high school, yeah, I dated and I went out on dates and stuff.
I don't think there's anything wrong with dating someone in high school, but I definitely never felt the pressure or even the urge to date someone in high school, as far as I'm concerned. And in high school, it seems like it's very much, you know, like maybe you date someone or maybe you hook up. But in college, there's much more of a hookup atmosphere, at least at my university.
Hooking up can mean a wide variety of things. I think it's also much more of a regional term, because I go to school on the East Coast now for college, and on the East Coast it's much more maybe you're at a party and somebody makes out, and that's or then they hang out for a little bit after the party. That's much more hooking up. Up here, it seems to be a little more infrequent. The term hooking up was used in high school, at least, in my experience, and it seemed to be a lot more serious.
Well, maybe that's because you were just in college versus high school. But I think hooking up means some sort of physical contact, and it's maybe not as much of a it's not as much of a deep relationship, like you care about the person, but you're attracted to them. And after a party, it's like you go into some room and do things with that person. And afterwards, you might see them, and you might not, and you might not want to see them.
At my school, it's definitely, I think hooking up is just part of the culture. It's sort of hard to find someone to date without going through the hooking up process first. It's an interesting term, I think, because hooking up seems to imply that you're not exclusive with the person and that the other person is free to hook up or date whoever they want. But at the same time, you know, if all of the relationships at my school begin with hooking up, then at some point you have to draw the line between where it becomes exclusive.
In high school, there's this pressure maybe there's this pressure to hook up, and then you create drama, and then you're a little more popular and people are texting about you all night, and it's not just about your hormones, and I mean, while that is part of it, and while you might be under the influence of something else, it's also this kind of pressure socially.
I never felt that pressure, honestly, to be in high school. I mean, I never felt the pressure to date. That was always my own decision, I felt like. In high school, though, I felt like a lot of people will latch on to anything that's happening romantically and make it drama, because I guess that's just high school and people want to make drama about that.
Yeah, I think it's crazy how much people do share on Facebook. And it's sometimes, if you are curious about something, you can go on your Facebook and find out exactly what you want, and you know, your little stalker self wants to know. And I don't think that's healthy for either side.
A lot of the ways I approached that in high school was I decided never to show my relationship status on Facebook. I don't put a lot of stuff on Facebook about relationships. I actually never really done that.
There are people kissing in the hallways and holding hands, and it's not pleasant to see for a lot of people walking by, especially if you don't know them, it's just this gross thing, and if you do know them, it's a little bit too much.
Sometimes it seems like it's too much simply because in high school it seems like it's too serious. Like, you don't really need to walk your partner to their science class fourth period and then make out with them right in front of the teacher. It just seems a little bit, you know, a little bit too show-offy, perhaps. That's not really what a relationship is about. I think the seriousness of a relationship really makes itself evident right before people leave for college, so that summer after senior year, when you're deciding whether or not you want to do the long-distance relationship thing or whether you're just going to break up now. And it seems like a lot of times one party, or I had a friend who really wanted to stay together with this guy and didn't think that there was any reason to be dating someone unless you thought in the long term you'd stay together. And so was very upset when he wanted to break up before going to university.
I think the biggest thing is spending a lot of time together, and that's kind of what makes any relationship really deep. And so, like, one girl that I'm thinking of really spent every waking moment with her boyfriend, and then when he went to college and she was still a senior, she stayed with him and thought that she was going to get married. And I know that, I mean, she would talk about looking on his Facebook and, like, seeing these pictures of him with random people at parties and kind of thinking if he was on the same page as her.
I think in high school, a lot of people go into relationships saying, this is going to be serious. And I think that's a very strange thing to do. I don't think that in any dating pool at least not in high school, and maybe not in college either. I don't think you should go into any relationship being like, oh, I'm going to date this person because one day we're going to get married and have, you know, three perfect children. I mean, that's a very strange thing to do. I think the way to do it is to be much more casual about it at first, and and remember that there are other important things going on in life?
My parents, they didn't put any rules or age limits on it. I mean, if I went somewhere, they'd like be home by X time, like probably 10:30, 11, something mm-hmm. like that. But they would always like, you know, just remind me like be a gentleman, that kind of thing, before I go out. And in high school, you know, you can they would always, you know, just ask how it was going. I think they were much more observant about it, especially when I was, you know, freshman, sophomore year. By the time I was a senior, they knew about it, but they didn't inquire into that.
I had a friend who couldn't, you know, her mother really oversaw every aspect of her possibility of dating, and she wasn't allowed to wear mascara until a certain age, and she wasn't allowed to wear makeup. There were certain kinds of clothing, and it led up. She never dated anyone in high school, but I don't think she wanted to, but her mother thought she wanted to.
And I had a friend who was really Christian, and her parents had really strict rules. And when she did date people, it would be secretive, and she wouldn't tell them right away.
In high school, I mean, maybe it was just the crowd I ran with. That wasn't really seemed to be the end goal was sex. It seemed to be, you know, not really, you know, the term dating around, you know, figuring out what kind of person you like to date. I think that seemed to be much more of the focus.
Like, the biggest part of dating should be getting to know people and what you like and what doesn't work and what kind of personalities you can work with and even live with and have kids with. And so in dating is an opportunity to spend a lot of time with someone and go through those bumps in the road.
In an odd way, dating's also a good way to spend a lot of time with yourself. I think that you don't really figure out who you are or what you want until you've spent a lot of time thinking about someone else and what your serious relationship with them is.
And I think another thing is that when you do love someone or care about someone, you give them things that you might not feel like you could possibly give. And that's it what Sydney was saying, it opens up your own self and you learn a lot.
Sydney, Eli, and Aviva shared their thoughts with Sarah Gonzalez. I'm Shannon Sheehy, and you're listening to Kids These Days. Ashley Barrera and Kyle Bradford are discussing dating with me today on our program. And Kyle, I understand that your partner's children are teens, so I thought maybe you might have some observations or some reaction to this piece that would be great to hear.
I thought the most interesting thing through that piece was when the girl said that she felt hooking up was a necessary step for something more. And I think it speaks to the whole laissez-faire attitude that I see in her son as he's now getting to that point where girls are really starting to be important. He's now wearing cologne where he wasn't before.
And this is your partner's son that you're referring to.
Right, mm-hmm. Exactly. And But even then, though, it's like their relationships with girls are far different than they were when I was a teen back in the 80s. And now it's just kind of a hodgepodge, if you will. And if there's no rhyme or reason, and they just kind of are just friends, and they really don't have any intention of getting anything more. But I guess they're still finding themselves at this point, but it's really just a laissez-faire attitude on the whole relationship dating scene right now.
And it feels very different to you, I hear you saying, than your experience when you were yourself a young person.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I was a teen in the 80s, it's like everybody had a girlfriend, and they were boyfriend and girlfriend, and when they broke up, it was a big deal. Everybody was talking about it for like a week. It's just not like that anymore, you know, in the way that I see him and interacting with his friends and girls, and it's just not like that.
Hmm. Ashley Barrera, what's your experience when you meet people and hear their stories? And, you know, is it very different, as Kyle is saying, today when kids get together romantically than it was previously?
You know, I think the teens in the interview were talking about it. Regionally, things are a little bit different, and we're talking here now about how generationally we're seeing differences. And Kyle talked about being a teen in the 80s, and I was a teen in the 2000s. And, you know, I had a serious boyfriend in high school, And when we broke up, it was devastating, and everyone talked about it. And I don't remember as much of the hooking up in that sense going on. So even, I mean, 10, 15 years later, there's been, it seems to be like a big shift. And I have, I don't have that experience personally with a child that's at that age. But I know, you know, people coming in and they're kind of not sure how to navigate this with
their
teen.
And when you say people, you mean the parents.
The parents, yeah.
Parents aren't sure.
They're not real sure how to navigate this, you know. This certainly wasn't what was going on when I was a teen in the 80s or in the 90s. And not so much, I mean, people my age aren't generally having teenagers quite yet. But there is that big shift. And so I don't necessarily think it's even, oh, mom, dad, you just don't get it. You know, you were a teenager so many years ago. Well, actually, I was a teenager not so many years ago, and things really have shifted. And so I think one of this piece in particular that just aired is excellent to get that perspective. You know, and I advocate a supportive and trusting and open relationship between parents and children the best that you can. And some of that means, as a parent, keeping your opinion back a little bit and just listening, not preparing your response as your teen is coming home and telling you the events, if you're so fortunate that they're willing to come home and share the events of a party that went on or this new person that they've met, to really gather that information and kind of sit on it. Certainly, as Kyle mentioned earlier, the importance of living your values and modeling those to your children, whatever it is that your family does believe. But I think there's some research that could be done in this area. And maybe there's a need of some new books about parenting, dating teenagers in this day and age.
Dating world.
Absolutely.
Well, Kyle, since you know, your two biological children are 8 and 9, they'll very soon be transitioning into teens. And then your partner's kids are a little older. So, like, you know, how do you have advice for parents whose kids are starting to date, you know, or become active in some way romantically or sexually? Like, what is great fatherly advice from your perspective?
I think there's two things. Cynthia, who's my partner, has done just a remarkable job of communicating with her teen son. The relationship they have is remarkable, and it is different than most of the mom teen sons that you see. Even my own experience, I was never as close to my mom as he is, and he talks to her openly, and they're able to share things. For me personally, as my children begin to move into the dating scene, I have, and it just goes back to what I talked about earlier, I have to live the values now so that when the time comes and I start to see things and I'm able to make observations about what they're doing, I'm able to make a judgment call or give them advice and know that I live by that advice myself. Mm-hmm. I'm a really big parent on, you know what, if you're going to talk the talk, you've got to walk the walk too. Mm-hmm. And kids are smart, and you know, if you call them out on one thing and they know that you did something completely different, they're going to let you know. Mm-hmm. And you're going to end up coming back to you're going to end up having to relive that, and you'll be like, gosh, I wish I hadn't done that. Now
I could see that. Well, I'd like to mention that from kidsthesedays.org, we're going to be linking you to different resources and reports that we've found while we were preparing for today's show, including a Psychology Today article by Carl E. Pinkert, who is a PhD. And he's talking about your teens when they start dating. And he mentions that parents can begin by describing three components of a serious relationship, which he defines as attraction, enjoyment, and respect. And he also says that as parents, it is not your job to manage their relationships. It's your job, however, to provide your son or daughter with the important questions to ask. And I think that these observations kind of go along with what both you, Kyle, and Ashley were saying as well. And I also want to mention that we'll link to the recent Youth Risk Behavioral Survey. And this is information that comes from Alaska high school students and is done anonymously, but it asks them questions about different behaviors, including risky behaviors that they may be engaging in. But, you know, from the statistics that we have from the YRBS, it doesn't look like there's huge changes in, you know, kids reporting sexual activity or a lot of sexual activity or unsafe sexual activity. In fact, it looks like there's been some decreases in our state, at least in self-reporting in Alaska. So we'll link to the YRBS report as well from kidsthesedays.org. We are talking about dating today, and Kyle Bradford joins us from Atlanta, Georgia, where he blogs as the Chopper Papa. And Ashley Barrera, who is a marital and family therapist in Anchorage, is speaking with us today. I'd also like to ask you, starting with you, Kyle, actually, you know, we just talked about how the teen dating scene is perhaps different than it was when those of us who are now adults were teens ourselves. But how is the adult dating scene these days? Is it really different? And I ask that question because, you know, there's speed dating and online matchmaking sources and so forth. So how different is dating today than it was, say, when you were a teen in the 80s, Kyle?
Like trying to catch the wind. And what I mean by that is when I started dating shortly after my divorce, I was online and I would read these profiles and you could just tell that they were canned to get attention. And when I would meet these women, okay, no, you're older than you said you were. You don't look like that. That picture was from 1984. And it was just constant, you know, misinformation. And as I moved beyond the online dating thing, at least here in Atlanta, in the South, the hooking up concept, which is something that I did not understand or really know about, is prevalent.
Even among adults?
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, wow.
And in the South, it's, you would think, you know, being in the Bible Belt and all, but hooking up is... It's more prevalent, I think, for adults than it is for children, at least where I live. I mean, everybody, the gym, it's constant.
That's really interesting. So you know, what kind of advice, Kyle, then, might you give the newly divorced or perhaps the widow or the widower who, you know, has recovered emotionally from losing their partner? They've got a family that they're raising, and they are interested and, you know, making those first attempts at meeting somebody new and going out on those first dates. You know, what is the advice that you have for people who are just starting that process?
Two things. First, if they have prepared themselves emotionally to move on, whether it be from a divorce, as you said, or from the death of a spouse. And then secondly, and this was from the matchmaker from the earlier part of the program, making a list of what you're looking for. I know that sounds corny. I know that it sounds so like administrative, but I did it. I wrote down, you know, what I wanted. I mean, I was as specific as like how tall I wanted her to be, you know, whether she was blonde or brunette. I mean, you can go crazy with it, so you kind of got to control yourself a little bit. But I wrote down the personality traits and the attitudes and the way that she, you know, her life views. And it kind of, you know, I hate to say this, it kind of keeps you between the lines. And what I mean by that is, you know, if you've got this and you've thought about this, and this is not something that should be done like over a glass of wine. I mean, it's something you should think about for a while and really put some thought into. And, you know, if you meet someone who doesn't fall within those boundaries, it's best to just go ahead and end it then before you go down a path that you kind of end up regretting. And so few people do that. That's the piece of a dating advice that I give so many people that I talk to who are getting back into the scene or they've complained to me about how they just can't find the right person. It's like driving. If you don't know where you're going, you're not going to know how to get there, right? So if you don't know what you're looking for, then you're just going to find the first thing that comes around and we end up getting disappointed.
And you don't think that doing that necessarily narrows your search down so far that you might miss that great person that you didn't know that you could love so much?
Years ago when I was dating, I would hear a lot of women especially say, you know, I would rather be alone than be with the wrong person. And at the time, I thought that was like so arrogant and like, you know, but as the more that I thought about it, they were right. I mean, I would rather not be in a relationship than be in some relationship with someone who ultimately is not right for me. You know, I spend 3 or 4 years with someone and it ends up blowing up because of something that you settled for a while and then you ultimately said, you know what, I just can't deal with this anymore. Whether it be something as simple as smoking or someone who drinks too much or, you know, whatever the case may be. So, yeah, you know, it does kind of sound a little bit, you know, you're kind of painting yourself into a corner, but it's either that or you go through several years of your life and then end up regretting you were ever with the person.
Mm-hmm. So tell me, You also on your blog, Chopper Papa, have some advice for once you've started dating and you've started to get serious about someone and say there are families that need to meet, children that need to meet. You have some great advice, I thought, for that first meeting, and I'd love for you to share that with us.
You know, that is like the million-dollar question. You know, you've met someone and, you know, they either do or don't have kids, just like Ashley who doesn't, because, you know, the relationship is not set, right? I mean, you could get the kids together and realize they can't stand each other. You know, that's going to make it difficult. But the way that you handle that first meeting is really important on how the future relationship with the kids and then without the kids will go. I say that first and foremost, it needs to be brief. You know, don't go on vacation the first time you bring the kids together. All right, let's not go to the beach for the weekend. Secondly, it needs to be public. I would not meet at either person's house. I would make it somewhere at a mall or maybe at a restaurant for an hour or something. You know, and then third and lastly is just make sure that you've given the kids some time. You know, hey, listen, on Saturday of this week, we're going to meet such and such as kids so that, you know, they're not surprised. Kids don't necessarily do well with change. And if you can give them some heads up and give them the opportunity to kind of prepare mentally for what's about to go down, then I think that a lot of times it will end up being better. The first time that I met Cynthia's kids, we were walking back from church. It's like, you know, a 300-yard walk. So we met after church, and we said hello, and then we walked together the 300 yards, and that was it. But it was perfect. They got a chance. They didn't feel uncomfortable, like, you know, all of a sudden he's trying to be my dad or something like that. But it was great. They put a name with a face, and then we would be able to build on it from there.
Well, thanks for sharing that advice. And Ashley Barrera, actually, in the time that we have left, you know, maybe you have something to add to the questions that Kyle was just addressing, the first meeting of the potentially mm-hmm. to-be blended family. Also, you know, when you're just getting back out there, what you might want to be considering. And I know that you had some additional resources you wanted to share.
I think one thing is important to remember, if there is another parent involved and you're co-parenting with your former partner, give that person a heads up respectfully so that when the child comes home, hopefully it's a healthy relationship and the child's not going to be used for information, but so that the child isn't delivering the news and then having perhaps a shocked parent, even if the parent's perfectly fine with it, but just didn't know. Mm-hmm. Just out of respect and honor that person, just as I imagine you'd want to know if your child was meeting somebody new that might have a potential role in their life. And talking about what those roles are going to be, you know, is this something that appears might be merging into a step-parent role, or are you meeting the 15-year-old and, yeah, that's mom's boyfriend. That person isn't anyone to me. And so it's important to remember that the relationship between the adults is very different than the relationships between the adult and that child. And your kids aren't necessarily going to like that person. And the beauty of it is they don't have to. You guys can find a way to work through that. Going and talking to a family therapist might be one aspect as adults to kind of to merge through that, but ensuring that everyone's needs are met, because as an adult, as a human, you have a right, to find someone that you love and to be with. And if that person makes you happy, then maybe all they need to be is the person that makes you happy, if you guys can both be okay with that. They don't have to be a step parent. And so those are all just really important dialogues to have with your child as well. Who do you want this person to be to you? What would you like to call this person? What are you okay with? And certainly your child is not in a position to okay your relationship or not, but for them to understand that their needs are also important is very important, as they might start questioning, well, is mom or dad going to have enough love for me? Or are you going to love those kids more than you love me and my siblings? And I think Isolina Ricci, which is one of the books I'm going to recommend, is the author of Mom's House, Dad's House. And she also has an excellent companion book called Mom's House, Dad's House for Kids that addresses some of these things from the kid's perspective. And it talks just to the kid. And so as an adult, if you're reading the Mom's House, Dad's House book for yourself, knowing what's in that book and gifting it to your child so that he or she can explore their own experiences in their own time is a really wonderful idea. And it's a great resource to have out there.
Great. Well, excellent. I want to thank both of you guys for the time you took to have this conversation today. Kyle Bradford joined us from the studios of WABE in Atlanta, Georgia. He's also known as Chopper Papa.
and blogs about the single family life he leads in the South. We'll link you to his blog from kidsthesedays.org. And Ashley Barrera is a marital and family therapist who works here in Anchorage. And we will link to that book, the pair of books she just mentioned, as well as some other resources she provided for us today from our website at kidsthesedays.org. Thanks to both of you so much for being with us this hour.
Thank you.
Thank you, Shannon.
We've been talking today about dating as a single parent and dealing with kids when they start dating, but married couples also need to get out now and again for a little one-on-one couple time. Our KTD On The Go blogger, Erin Kirkland, suggests skipping the traditional date night for something a little more adventurous.
10 years ago, I was a single mother juggling full-time work, a child, a dog, and a house payment. I barely had time to go to the grocery store, much less find a date. 9 years on my own had settled me somewhat contentedly into single-parent lifestyle, hoping but not really expecting much to change. But change it did. A few years later, I had met and married the man of my dreams, added a second child, and stepped into the role of travel journalist. Life definitely became crazier, especially when we moved, kids and caboodle, to Alaska. The once dating game during my single years morphed into a mission impossible, simultaneously navigating marriage around Cub Scouts, school lunches, and magazine deadlines. Going out for date night meant I had to put on lip gloss and non-yoga pants and venture someplace beyond my front yard. So my husband and I turned to a sort of non-traditional date night concept. Actually, date morning, afternoon, or early evening. It was easy, really, once we stepped away from the calamari appetizer and Cosmo's idea and returned to the great Alaska outdoors. More than once, we've shoved a bottle of wine, 2 glasses, and a cold pizza into our backpacks and snowshoed, hiked, or skied our local trails. Sometimes we'll ride bikes to a coffee shop and linger. For once, no responsibilities hurrying us away from the table. I won't say we never head downtown for a little grown-up time, but I find this simpler form of dating my spouse to be rather appealing, especially since our pursuits usually involve an extra small person or two. Alaskan parents are a bold bunch, who probably met their own significant other while engaging in their favorite outdoor activities. Ah, yes, the days before kids, when a mere look from the other meant grabbing gear and hopping in the car, kayak, or on the bike, and just going. No strings or babies attached. It's good to get away sometimes and rekindle that passion, not just for the one you love, but for the sake of what you love, together. True, many adventures don't always go the way we planned, but it's that we're in this together mode that keeps the spark alight and alive. Like the time my husband took a day off for a little skiing trip to Alyeska Resort, complete with breakfast out, wine at lunch, and a babysitter until 5. It would have been an epic day, too, if someone had remembered to bring the key to the rocket box holding our skis hostage on top of the car. Yeah, we're laughing now. But think about it. Next time you and your partner have a few hours to spare, consider actually using all that his and hers gear in the garage at the same time. There's just nothing like sharing some wilderness with the one you love. Ooh la la la. For Kids These Days, I'm Erin Kirkland.
That's it for this hour of Kids These Days. Today's show on dating can be found right now in full on our website. That's kidsthesedays.org. You can also find other KTD On The Go features there as well. Link to our featured contributors and today's guests, our regular bloggers, and others who make the program possible. That's all there, plus tons more. Kids These Days had help today from Erin Kirkland in Anchorage. Jessica Cochran is our regular contributor and our technical editor. Sarah Gonzalez produces the show, manages and edits our online offerings, and manages the business end of Kids These Days. Lost Lander composed and performed our theme music and other original music pieces. I'm Shanna Sheehy. Thanks for joining me today, and I'll see you next week.
Kids These Days is an independent production of the Content Producers Guild. The opinions shared on the program are those of the host, guests, and contributors, and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of KTD producers, partners, or funders. Major funding for Kids These Days comes from the Association of Alaska School Boards and its Initiative for Community Engagement. The program is made in partnership with KSKA-FM in Anchorage and the Alaska Public Radio Network. Find out more about Kids These Days anytime at kidsthesedays.org.